Kaffee in seiner besten Form mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo. In jeder Cubo-Kapsel steckt Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Für Espresso, Kaffeecrema oder Kaffee Grande auf Knopfdruck. Die neue Cubo One überzeugt mit Premium-Design, kompakter Größe und kleinem Einstiegspreis ab 29 Euro. Dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie wird jede Tasse besonders aromatisch mit samtiger Crema. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo-Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
Stu does America.
So, did you catch Friday's new episode of State of the Race? If not, head to the Stu does America podcast stream right now and find it with all the rest of our free episodes. We'll be putting out another one later this week. Be sure to check out the YouTube channel as well, youtube.com/Stu does America. Like and comment on the videos and hit the bell for notifications. Dan Andros is here to break down the Harrison Butker backlash. The prosecution comes to rest in Donald Trump's hush money trial. We'll get into that a little bit. We're going to start by doing the death of the free market. And, you know, I don't know. I'm one of these guys that thinks the free market's a good thing. I know it's weird. I think we get good results from it. I think we've had good results from it. I'm not of this new theory that all this has been for naught and everything's been bad and everything's bad all the time. I think we've done pretty incredible things by embracing the free market. But there's an interesting thing happening, and part of it just has to do with generalized economic distaste for what's going on right now. Let me go through some of this, and because a lot of this has to do with both sides kind of coming together to reject the free market. And I know everyone loves bipartisanship, but I'm not a huge fan of that kind of bipartisanship. Of course, people, when they look at the economy, they kind of see through who might be responsible for this. Trump is trusted more than Biden on inflation, which is, of course, a top issue for voters. According to a new poll, U.S. adults trust Donald Trump over Joe Biden on the issue of inflation by double-digit margins, according to a new ABC News Ipsos poll this month, which found that price increases remain a top concern for voters with less than 6 months to go till Election Day. And all 85% of poll participants said inflation is an important issue, making it the second highest priority among adults surveyed. The top priority is the economy, which also relates to an individual's perceptions of price increases. On each of those issues, the economy and inflation, adults surveyed by ABC News Ipsos said they trusted Trump over Biden by a margin of 14 percentage points. And, you know, some of this comes down to what you think the economy should be doing, right? Like, how do you think it should work? What are the things that you want and like about it? And, like, you know, of course, when you're talking about just generalized the economy, you can have all sorts of different views, right? Like, you can say, oh, well, I think an economy would be better if they took 75% of all of our money and handed it out to everybody equally because I'm a socialist. Okay, well, if that's you, okay, that's fine. I could see why you'd like Joe Biden. But when it comes to inflation, how can there possibly be any conversation about who's more responsible for the problems we've had there? I mean, that is entirely Joe Biden, and policies supported by Joe Biden, right? Like, you can argue maybe some of the COVID funding goes into that before Biden came into office. I think that's fair, but also something that was supported by Joe Biden and everybody in his party. The spending that has gone, you know, put us in trillions of dollars of debt are not only policies supported by Joe Biden and passed by Joe Biden, but also policies that were voted on by Joe Biden from 1972 to 2008. So you have a situation here where Joe Biden is pretty central into a lot of the problems that we've had. And again, as I mentioned, I don't think the economy is the worst thing in the world. I don't think that we've had all negative outcomes from this. I mean, I think when you look at the way people look at Trump and they look at Biden, they say, well, we trust Trump more with the economy. Well, why? Why do you trust Trump more? I think a lot of that is because he actually does respect the free market more than Joe Biden does. People look at this and say, well, we know that's good for the economy, even though we might not like the fairness aspects or whatever else, whatever BS they come up with. At the end of the day, people kind of inherently know the market works better. It's the question of how much do you want to put up with any negatives associated with it, and do you try to fix those negatives? Because, as we all know, I mean, like, you know, the market's not perfect. It is in some ways, a perfect reflection of certain individual things, but it doesn't mean it works perfectly for everybody at all times. Like, we've all lost jobs. Maybe our company, goes out of business and you have to deal with that. That is, at some ways, you can blame the free market for that. Of course, you can also blame the free market for you getting a better job later on. All these things play together. But, you know, people are pretty clear about who they think is the problem with the economy. CBS News poll has abortion access finding wide support, but inflation and immigration concerns boost Trump in Arizona and Florida. This question is, this is just from Arizona, economic situation for people like you. Do they care a lot? Well, registered voters looking at Biden, 20% say they care a lot, 30% for Trump. And you see that people are just more, you know, Trump is going to get more support when it comes to the economy. Choice for president among likely voters. Joe Biden is behind in both of these measures heavily. 9 points in Florida, 7 points, or excuse me, 5 points in Arizona. That is a little closer than some of the other polling we've seen in Arizona, but I think representative about where that race is at the moment. And what are the major factors when you vote for president? This is in Arizona. Number one, the economy, 82%. Number two, inflation, 78%. The state of democracy. Now, remember, Arizona was really central in that. Carrie Lake is on the ballot there. They've done a lot. They've done a lot of thinking about this. Both sides are very focused on this. The Democrats saying, I can't believe these crazy people who think the election was stolen. And Republicans have been very much in line with, you know, not quite to Carrie Lake's level, perhaps. They didn't really seem to back her fully on her gubernatorial election being stolen. But certainly the Republican Party in Arizona has been very active on the idea that there were shenanigans going on. So that's third. U.S.-Mexico border, as you'd expect in Arizona, a big issue, 61%. Crime, 59%, again, tied to the border. Abortion, 51%. Gun policy at 50%. So you'll see, I mean, like, I am a skeptic as to whether you can bring home a national election on the issue of abortion. It is, I guess, theoretically possible. We've seen some success in off-year elections. I think a lot of that stuff gets swallowed up by these big personalities. When you got Donald Trump on the ticket, the election's going to be about Donald Trump. It's not going to be about his abortion stance, which is honestly even it's tough to even detect what it is. You know, he's done some great things for abortion, you know, against abortion, you know, expanding. And his, you know, obviously the Roe versus Wade thing was a big thing. We've talked about it. We, you know, 6/24/22 is the date. I know it off the top of my head. Okay, that's coming up here in just a few weeks. You can, by the way, get the shirts and the mugs and everything else at StuDoesMerch.com. Overturning Roe versus Wade, I think, is one of the most important things and probably the best thing that he accomplished while in office is putting those Supreme Court justices in that did that. That being said, he's running as pretty much a moderate on abortion. He's saying basically states can handle it themselves. And, you know, he says 6 weeks is too restrictive. That's the only number he's really put on there. He flirted with the idea of 15 weeks. And of course, as we've noted, you know, that would basically block about 5% of abortions if you put a national ban at about 15 weeks and it actually held. So is it a is he a hardcore anti-abortion, pro-life activist? I mean, not really. That's not really who he is. I mean, he used to be very hard pro-choice. He's very much so pro-choice, as he talked about back in the day. My goodness, graphs show how Donald Trump dominates Biden when household wealth gets hit by inflation. And you see this over and over again where inflation and the economy are number one and number two. And you'll hear the numbers being spun by Biden to say, look, household wealth has gone up about the same path as has as it did under Trump. It's not that big of an issue. They are looking to just try to take away the best issue for Donald Trump and the most important issue across this entire election. Hey, if people think that Donald Trump is better for their economy, he's probably going to win. And this is not you don't need to go crazy with this. You could overstate the it's the economy stupid point. There is a possibility of overstating that. And sometimes we do it. But like generally speaking, you want a general guide, it certainly gets you a nice big lead. OK, and here's what these charts look like. You do see if you just look at the numbers, Joe Biden has about the same rise. I mean, Trump's a little bit ahead when you look at nominal value. But when you adjust it for inflation, you see the real effects here. And even if you look at the nominal value, that first bump is mostly associated with giant government transfers, right? We gave people a bunch of checks at the beginning, and that helped their wealth go up quickly, where Donald Trump didn't obviously have that back in 2016, 2017, 2018, in that area. Where if you adjust it for inflation, you see that when the inflation kicks in, we have basically no net household wealth growth for Joe Biden. His entire presidency, he's at basically zero growth. That's what people feel. And that doesn't even include if they had to buy a new house and are spending more and more and more and more on mortgage prices to get less and less and less and less. We had to trade in one of our older cars. My wife had, she had an SUV, and we were getting a new SUV, both of which are absolutely destroying the planet. I mean, like, these things were both just awesome planet killers. You'd love them. But she wanted to switch one out for the other one. And, like, you know, the price was basically the same. You know, it was a newer car, so of course you're getting into the payments thing. And but, you know, you deal with that as you're getting newer cars later in life. But the big problem was the rate of the loan, right? Well, you're financing a car, and we would, you know, the last car we bought was 2020 or 2021, paying nothing on interest, right? They're giving you basically the car, they'll let you take it out the door for basically no interest at all. Now you're at 6%, 7%, 8%. These rates are insane. So you're getting, for the same car, basically, you're getting much, much higher payments. And this is affecting everybody. And a lot of that's never really included in the economic output. You might say, well, their wages are gone up this much, and you know, the GDP has grown this much. But when people are just spending for the same exact thing much, much more, just because a number that says APR after it is higher, they're going to get really frustrated and annoyed at that. They feel that. They know that. You can't lie your way out of it. I mean, yes, Corinne Jean-Pierre is terrible at her job, but, like, it's not her fault on this particular thing. When people are feeling this every single day, every time they go to the grocery store, every time they go to the gas pump, every time they make a mortgage payment, every time they have to buy anything, when they realize that they're spending more and more and more of that, you can't just, like, do your little Jedi mind trick on them. You can't just say, well, look, the economy looks a lot better over here. That's not the way this works. People know. People feel it. And when they feel it, you lose. So you have an entire media structure that's going to try to help Joe Biden lie his way out of this. But, man, it's going to be a tough sell. And one of the big problems here is that now we're at a point where what we used to always come back to when we had economic problems was, hey, let's let the market do its work. All right. We keep getting in the way. Look at what happens when we get in the way. Let's just get out of the way and let America succeed. Let people succeed on their own merits. Let them do what they want to do with all the regulation. And Donald Trump has done some good things when it comes to regulation when he was president. But what we're seeing now is something I kind of think is scary for the future of the economy. The New York Times highlights this in, I don't know if it was really more of a positive article about this. That's not how I took it. A new centrism is rising in Washington. Call it neo-populism, a bipartisan attitude that mistrusts the free market ethos instead of embracing it. I find this to be very bad. I'll be frank with you. I think it's terrible. I think it's a terrible idea to avoid the free market. Are there things? Of course, you know, the government is more involved in our lives than I think it should be already. But, you know, you're going to come to the most extreme examples. You can always find something on the fringes where government should be more involved, I guess. But, like, we're getting more and more to the part where it's not Democrats saying we want bigger government and Republicans saying, no, we want smaller government. It's basically both sides saying we need bigger government. What if we trade our big government policies for each other and we can have them both? And then you get a real expansion of what we're of this sort of middle that isn't like the old school middle. It's not the old school middle of people who, like, you know, were against the Soviet Union and generally embraced free market principles. And, you know, the era of big government is over. You remember Bill Clinton saying that. Well, it's definitely not over anymore. These are a couple of the examples that they talk about in the story. Bills like the TikTok sale, Ukraine aid, the House motion to block the motion to remove Mike Johnson as Speaker. You see bipartisan agreement. I think you see it more, though, in the Senate, where, you know, the infrastructure bill is a good argument here. You know, 19 Republicans supported the infrastructure bill. That's a catastrophe. The CHIPS and Science Act, another thing. 17 Republicans supported that. That's a third of the Republicans in the Senate, which is supposed to be the one that's more free market. And you see this happening where, you know, obviously Donald Trump has never been like, he obviously loves the economy. He loves business. He's never been much on this, you know, really talking about restricting spending or restricting these big programs. Never really been the thing that he's pushed. And part of their argument here is he wasn't really punished for that. Republicans generally just embrace these policies after it showed voters would not run away from them. A couple things to mention here. The past 4 years are hard to explain, they say, because of all the polarization. These years, though, have been arguably the most productive period of Washington bipartisanship in decades. Now, if you like Washington bipartisanship, you'd think you'd like the last 4 years. But do you? Have the last 4 years done a lot for you? We know, obviously, the COVID thing was a big bipartisan situation. All the spending, everything that went on in COVID. We think of it now as a little bit more divisive, but honestly, that first year was pretty much everyone lined up together to do the same things. Bipartisanship in action. You also see the Semiconductor Chips Act we talked about, the Infrastructure Act we talked about. By the way, thought all of these ideas were bad at the time. There's a veterans health bill that went through, gun violence, addressing that, the postal service, the aviation system, same-sex marriage, anti-Asian hate crimes, the electoral process, all bipartisan situations that were passed. Did you like all of them? This flurry of bipartisanship may be surprising, says the Times, but it's not an accident. It's dependent on the new emergence of a new form of American centrism. They call it neo-populism. Democrats and Republicans grown skeptical of free trade. Democrats and a slice of Republicans have come to support industrial policy in which the government tries to address the market's shortcomings. The infrastructure and semiconductor laws are examples of this. And it goes on and on and on and on. And it highlights something that I think is concerning. Look, the Republicans were never good at keeping spending down. They were never good at opposing programs. They were never good really embracing the free market, but at least they talked the game. They at least put dampers on the progress of the left to try to remove these important principles from our society. When you have a third of Republicans who are kind of like, yeah, I mean, if it's going to mean money coming to my district, if I can go to my people and say, well, we're keeping your jobs here, whether it works or not, if those things are included, all right, I'll go along with it. I'll go along with the spending. I don't mind bankrupting the country and my children and my grandchildren if it means I'm back in office here in a few years. And we're getting to the place now where we don't trust the free market at all. I mean, if Republicans don't do it, nobody does it. The Democrats certainly don't trust the free market at all. And you wonder if people are now moving. This is sort of the change from the Tea Party era to what you might call this neo-populism. Today, it's a change. And it's like, you can go back to sort of that idea of free market embrace. Well, that's kind of where voters seem to be. At least that's what people talked about all the time, right? That people talked about, you'd have, of course, conservatives and liberals, but then you'd have those people in the middle who were, socially liberal, but fiscally conservative. Well, there's really nobody left in that box. I mean, look at this. This is a scatter chart, if you will, of the voters. And you see the bottom right-hand quadrant here, which has almost nobody in it. That's the more fiscally conservative, but more socially liberal. You do see more people now, and this seems to be the path of the Republican Party at the moment, that are more socially conservative, which, generally speaking, I agree with, but more fiscally liberal. I mean, of course, it feels great to be able to say, hey, we've got this high, minimum wage coming in. We've got these big programs, we've got all these giveaways, we're building bridges, we're doing all these things. The same way it always feels good for Democrats to say those things, right? They can be popular. Maybe your friend has got a construction job building something. You can kind of buy people off with these big projects. And so what Republicans are saying is, we don't think our social views are the problem here. What we think is our fiscal views are the problem. But our fiscal views are what have made America what it is when it comes to an economic powerhouse. Our social views are, obviously very important. I mean, how much time have I spent talking about, for example, pro-life causes on this show? I mean, it's really, really important. We're going to be talking about Harrison Butker and how important it is to make sure that, someone like him gets defended for saying what he believes. Those are all vitally important. We talk about them daily on this show. But the economic part of this is really important, too. All these big innovations that we get come from the idea that we have a system that allows businesses to do what they want and people get out of their way. And more, both parties are like, we're going to get a little bit more in your way. I think this is a dangerous path for America. We need to make sure that we don't go down this path without realizing what we're doing. It's funny, a lot of the talk is sort of this neo-populism. We've seen a lot of the policy, generally speaking, still embrace the free market, especially from conservatives. If that's what goes on, if we're talking about social issues more, that's fine. Like, I think those things are really important, and I don't mind talking about them at all. We shouldn't dissolve what we believe on the economy. We shouldn't dissolve talking about lower taxes, lower regulation, fighting against a national debt that's out of control. Those things are all really, really important still. They didn't go away. And like, I think we can get the idea that, well, we're winning some battle on, you know, CRT in schools, which, again, as I say, incredibly important. But we might win that battle and lose our economy. And if we do that, like, I don't think we're going to be happy with that switch. I mean, I think we're much, much better off going off and, you know, getting our kids into the schools that we want, that teach what we want, rather than trying to walk that line, because I think it's going to be incredibly difficult to do so. Let's not just forget about the free market, everybody. Like, I think that's, let's not willy-nilly throw the baby out with the bathwater. We have problems with certain parts of the policies. We can fix those problems. But if we go too far, we're going to turn into some European, people always bring up Hungary. I don't want to be Hungary. Okay? Hungary's got a much more centralized economy than we do. And the fact that they agree with us on some social issues does not make them the model. Okay? They have certain things that they might do that are okay. There's nothing wrong with those things. You can look just like federalism, bits and pieces of the things that you like, take the things that work, but don't toss our free market economy in the trash, because we're not going to like what happens when it gets taken to the dump. The 2024 Atlantic hurricane season is likely to be destructive and costly. They are now projecting 24 named storms, 39 miles per hour or more, 11 hurricanes with winds up to 70 miles an hour or more. This really should put you in the mind of stocking up with critical medical supplies. And you don't need to have a hurricane. Like, you know, I'm very, very limited in my hurricane exposure here in Texas, so I don't think about hurricanes all that much. But we do know that we have natural disasters. We do know that we have terrorist attacks or who knows what's around the corner. You should be prepared. I mean, just the basic stuff that happened in COVID. We were just talking about that period. Well, the supply chain broke down. That's one of the things I'm talking about. When you lose the free market, you can lose the supply chain. If you lose the supply chain, you can lose your food, your toilet paper, your medicine. Don't let that happen. Get the Jace case. It provides 5 life-saving antibiotics for emergency use. All you have to do is fill out a simple form online, and you have it there in case you need it. There are dozens of add-on options as well. So check it out with Jace Medical. They are empowering people just like you to take care of your family's health. And what more can you ask for than that? Go to Jace.com and enter the code STU at checkout for a discount on your order right now. It's STU is the promo code at JaceMedical.com, JASE.com. Jace Case from Jace Medical. Get one today at Jace.com.
Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Cespri Sangold Kiwi. Das Stück für nur 55 Cent. Oder dunkle Tafeltrauben. 500 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
I want to bring in Dan Andros. He's managing editor at CBN News and also host of CBN's Quick Start podcast, which you can subscribe to now wherever you get your podcasts. Good way to wake up in the morning. Dan, thanks so much for coming on the program.
All right. Thanks for having me, Stu.
I appreciate it. You've done a lot of coverage of the Harrison Butker situation, and I wanted to bring you in to talk about it because it's fascinating to me. Here's a guy. He's a kicker for the Kansas City Chiefs. One of the top two or three kickers in the NFL. And he decided to make a speech at a college. You know, he's doing the whole yearly wrap-up. People are graduating. He's doing the whole thing. And he has these very controversial remarks that everyone gets all upset about. And, like, it's fascinating because what I keep reading is he told women to stay in the kitchen and barefoot and pregnant, and that was their only role in the world. But then when I read the speech, it's not at all what he seems to be saying.
No, and it's interesting, Stu, because I think a lot of people who agree with Harrison Butker and are defending him are still misinterpreting kind of what he said, or at least reading further into what he said and putting words into his mouth that he didn't actually say. And I think a lot of the reason, and particularly the quote about women, when he said, "I'd like to address women directly," is what people took issue with. And I think one of the things, Stu, that's frustrating and emblematic of sort of a problem we have today is that the one that went viral, and I don't have that one in front of me, but it was basically a look at Harrison Butker and had the clip, and it said, you know, here's what he says with quotes, and then it's a sarcastic sort of summary of what he said.
Right.
Harrison Bucker, women, get back in the kitchen and be pregnant. That's where you're best. And then that's what went viral. So then I go in and I go, well, what did he actually say? And I watch the clip and then I look at more of it. And it's like, you read it and you're like, okay, I'm not a genius. I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I want to at least see what he's saying. And it really doesn't look like he's saying that at all. That he's saying don't work. Cause that was the big complaint, right? Well, isn't that what it was?
Yeah.
He thinks women shouldn't work. Now, first of all, if that's his actual opinion, okay, it's at a Catholic school. This is a Catholic guy talking at a Catholic university. So what? I mean, I think even atheist Bill Maher was like, so what? I don't agree with him, but
it can be people can have opinions without the world blowing up. I've noticed this is true.
Yes, yes. But then look at his actual text here. If you want, we could go through it.
Do you have it in front of you? Because I think the wording here is important. It's been lost completely on the internet.
Yeah. And this is the part, I have it right here, the text of his speech. And he's addressing, this is the part where he specifically addresses the women. And he says, I want to speak directly to you briefly because I think it is you, the women, who have had the most diabolical lies told to you. How many of you are sitting here now about to cross the stage and are thinking about all the promotions and titles you're going to get in your career? Some of you may go on to lead successful careers in the world. But I would venture to guess that the majority of you are most excited about your marriage and the children you will bring in to this world. And then he talks about his specific example with his wife and how she, you know, went to college, but then ended up staying home and now would say that her favorite thing is being a homemaker. I don't see in those comments, Stu, where he says women can't work a job.
Right.
He says you're going to be most excited about your marriage and the children you will bring into the world. Is there a person in the world who goes, you know what? I love my accounting job more than I love my spouse and my children. Like, is this controversial? What's the counter argument there?
Right. That's one of the things that's fascinating. Obviously, whenever you say like, hey, what was the most important day of your life? Like, you know, what is the most important day of your life? The typical answer is, oh, like if you have some big thing that you did. You know, aside from my marriage and my kids being born, that was the best one. People say it like it's a disclaimer. Everyone knows that's what you're supposed to say and supposed
to
believe.
Not Harrison Bucker.
Yeah, I know. And it's like Harrison Bucker didn't say that. In fact, if I had one problem, honestly, with the paragraph you just read, is just the fact that it's directed at women. Like, it honestly should apply to men, too. Like, the fact that, you know, like we both have careers. We've done, you know, at least moderately okay. People might say to both of us, hey, we can tell your job is not your top priority by your performance. And that might be true. But the bottom line is both of us would say, like, I like my job. It's important to me. I try to do the best job that I can. But overwhelmingly much more important to me is my wife and family. I mean, like, that is normal human ordering of events, is it not?
Totally normal. And when he gives the example of his wife, he ends it with, because where he uses the word homemaker, he says, you know, he's thankful for his wife that she would convert to the faith, become my wife, and embrace one of the most important titles of all, homemaker.
Right.
He does not say the only title you can have, that you cannot have the title of job. He says none of those things. Everyone put those things into his mouth. So they clearly just put words into his mouth. And, you know, Stu, I got to dig it up here, but you make the comment about men. He actually said very similar thing addressing men. So if you give me a second, I can dig it up.
Yeah. I mean, and look, we've talked about the family structure being so important. It's why one of the reasons why we were so against the founding edict of the Black Lives Matter organization. Right. And it's certainly not about Black Lives Mattering. We all agree that Black Lives Matter. But when they're talking about destroying the nuclear family, like that is something that is really, really important to avoid. And I think that we go down these roads and people, they're just looking for something to be angry at. When this is something that, you know, if he were to say, hey, women should never work, that would be, again, just an opinion of a football kicker. So we should really keep it in perspective. But I mean, you know, it would be something that maybe you could say, okay, that's controversial and like, let's talk about it. Is there an issue there? But here he's just saying like, hey, we all are supposed to prioritize. We're all supposed to order. You know, obviously for him, faith is going to be probably number one. Family is going to be number two. Probably his job's below that somewhere, even though he's doing you know, pseudo important things like kicking, you know, field goals that defeat the Philadelphia Eagles in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, 100%. And it's like, again, short of him having the power to actually force women to stay at home, I mean, like Bill Maher said, he's like, where is the fire here? And again, this is at a Catholic university where he got a standing ovation for this speech. Would we all complain if the atheist was speaking at the atheist university and they said, you don't need God and just get God out of all the public sphere? Like, we'd all be like, oh, well, I guess that's what they say at atheist universities and move on with life. Yes. But now because we have social media, everyone's like, this opinion's in front of my face. I must be mad and I must address it. It's ridiculous.
Do you have the father side? If not, I've got one more thing I want to move on to. Okay, go ahead.
Now, real quick, I'll read it. He said, to the gentleman here today, part of what plagues society is this lie that has been told to you that men are not necessary in the home or in our communities.
As men, we
set the tone of the culture. Listen to this. He wants men barefoot and pregnant at home. Men can get pregnant now, I heard. And set the tone of culture. And when that is absent, disorder, dysfunction, and chaos set in. The absence of men in home is what plays a large role in the violence we see all around the nation. And he goes on about absentee father rates and stuff. So he's telling you to lean into that. I think he called it an important vocation or something like that. But he's basically saying a very similar thing to men.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's got to be a priority for both people, or the family thing doesn't work very well. If dad is a CEO and he's traveling 50 weeks a year, it's not really a family, right? Like, it's, you have to be there. You have to put, you know, your time in. It's important. Let me give you this, because I've been fascinated, as you have been, as to how this has been spun by the media. This is from Page Six. A mom of Chiefs player who told women to be homemakers, not what he said, as we just covered, is an accomplished physicist. And they say this like this is some bit of hypocrisy from the Butker family. Here's a guy who's saying he wants women to stay home in the kitchen, and his mom is a physicist. Like, this, I think, is a really good example as, like, he's, I don't think, critical of his mom and his mom's role. Like, he seems to love his mom very much. This is consistent with what he was saying. You could accomplish amazing things, but the thing you'll probably be most proud of is your family. Like, that is not crazy.
No, it's not. And it seems like she succeeded because one of her most important roles apparently was family, because they seem to have a good family who all like each other and smile in pictures together. So it seems like she achieved that goal and also had a job, as we talked about in the quote earlier, one of the most important titles all, which implies what? If we're putting on our thinking caps here, there are other important titles you can have.
Yeah, it really is amazing. Let me move on quickly before we leave. You're a big Boston Celtics fan. They are in the Eastern Conference Finals. Have had a really easy path, I would say. I would say. I mean, pretty much everything's broken their way here so far. They're one of the best teams in NBA history when you talk about statistics, are the Celtics. What do you expect? Are you nervous? I mean, the Indiana Pacers, I like watching them play, but, like, they don't seem like a serious threat here in the Eastern Finals.
I don't like all this setting the bar so high talk here, Stu. Best team in history. Now you're setting me up for is disappointment now. I can't enjoy any of this. I just have to nail bite this thing all the way through. I think Indiana will be interesting. They'll probably win a couple games. I do think Boston's a little not, I mean, we're still, a, I say we, this is just what we do, guys. Yeah, right. I'm sorry. But they're still a very good team without Kristaps Porzingis in the lineup, but Porzingis is the difference maker. So if he's not going to come back and not come back healthy, it might be a bit of a challenge against either Dallas or Minnesota, but I really like their chances. They're just the starting five is just too strong. There's just too many good options. It's kind of comical when you watch these games too, because it's like you're watching for 5 minutes and you're like, oh, that's right, Drew Holiday's on the team. Like he was out for a quarter and a half, and it's just like the substitutes come in and they just keep rotating in like two or three all-stars every time, and you're like, oh, it's fun to watch. I mean, they're just a solid team, but you know, the NBA is weird now. Any team can just sort of just put in a dud. I mean, we saw the Denver Nuggets, just they'd win by 20, then lose by 40. You know, it's just, who knows? I feel good about it. This is, about as good of an opportunity as the Celtics have had.
Wow. Well, there you go. I will say, the one time I've ever felt good about the Eagles winning the Super Bowl was the year they lost to the Chiefs and Butker kicked the field goal. So just be a little nervous here, Dan. I'm just trying to make you feel.
We're just going to keep Harrison Butker off the court and we'll be good.
Hey, real quick before we go, Caitlin Clark she's played her first few games. And I've been very entertained by your analysis of them on a group text. I mean, her team is seemingly terrible, and everyone's all over her like she's going to flop in the WNBA. I mean, it's amazing that we're talking about the WNBA. It shows her power there at all. What do you make of Caitlin Clark's first week?
Well, I watched these games, right? She's the one that got me interested. I have not watched WNBA. And they're all saying, oh, she's going to get owned and they're going to show her what's up. She's averaging like 17 something points in three games with a team that can't catch any of her passes. And they're running like three defenders at her at all times, which none of the other players seem to get happen to them. And so she'll be just fine. But the team isn't particularly strong, but I think she'll be good. But I mean, I watched one clip, Stu, like, because the one girl was complaining that Caitlin Clark got this big endorsement and they don't get anything. I watched a highlight tape of this girl and all she did was wide open layups. It was like, here's her highlight tape, wide open layups. I'm like, this is not, Caitlin Clark kind of looks like Steph Curry running around out there. She's fun to watch and everyone should be thanking her. And some of them are doing that now. They're kind of wising up like, hey, people actually care about us now. Maybe we should like this girl instead of try to slam her down on the ground and injure her.
Yeah,
then no one will watch us again.
Right, right. They all are trying to prove they can shut her down. It is it's interesting to watch, and it's a good test for her. I will say it's boring, though, watching, because when she was at Iowa, they just gave her the ball on every play, right? Like, every play was just run for her, and she just runs around and shoots it. Like, now they're, like, running an offense and throwing it to these terrible people who can't do anything. It's like,
I can't score.
Yeah,
they can't score. They're going to need to change that offense and go back to give it to Caitlin Clark all the time, 100% of the time.
That's the only way to go. Dan Andrus, managing editor at CBN News. Be sure to check him out on the CBN Quick Start podcast, where he talks a limited amount of women's basketball, I promise you.
Very limited.
Head over there and subscribe today. Dan, thanks so much for coming on the program.
All right, thanks, Stu.
Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Plötzlich fühle ich mich so entspannt.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Tiefenentspannt mit Wieso-Steuer.
The president of Iran is dead. A moment of silence for him. Okay, that's enough. Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi, he's known for his brutal crackdowns against political opponents, and he died at 63 in a helicopter crash, which is really unfortunate. He's known lovingly as the Butcher of Tehran, and so sad to hear him go. I can't wait for the conspiracy theories, though. It's going to definitely be Israel or us, of course, always responsible for everything that goes wrong, even though they were just trying to fly like a helicopter in the middle of the fog. We'll see if anything else comes out of that. The International Criminal Court prosecutor applies for arrest warrants for Netanyahu and the leader of Hamas. This is, of course, very, very connected to the typical way international court and the UN and all of these other international organizations deal with Israel. They just try to put them on the same plane as the people who are trying to murder them all the time. In this case, Hamas. That they're not equivalent, and they're doing them both. At least this time, they're actually doing the Hamas thing. I talked to you before about there was a UN vote to denounce Israel, and it was going through with flying colors. With the very limited opposition. And I think it was Austria, said, hey, like, what if we throw in here as well, we're going to denounce Hamas? You know, they were the ones that were murdering and, like, raping all the people. And that got voted down by everybody. At least they're saying also in this case, Hamas is bad. So I don't know, maybe we're moving in the right direction. And I will say Joe Biden had a pretty good statement on this. This is what's weird. He's, I mean, completely schizophrenic on this issue. I don't know if he just doesn't know what's going on, if he kind of remembers his old positions and is trying to implement them into this new world where he's supposed to not like Israel. I don't know what, I don't know what's going on. I will give you his statement. He said, the ICC prosecutor's application for arrest warrants against Israeli leaders is outrageous, he said in a statement. And let me be clear, whatever this prosecutor might imply, there is no equivalence, none, between Israel and Hamas. We will always stand with Israel against threats to its security. Now, this flies in the face of all of his actions over the past few months, right, that have been, he's been standing in the way of Israel's security basically on a daily basis. But he did, I will say the right thing, at least there, in my view. I mean, there is no equivalence. They're not the same thing. You don't say, oh, well, two sides of the same coin. You've got the people being murdered and the people doing the murdering. And which one, you know, like to me, it's just not, there's no equivalence here whatsoever. Going after Hamas is not only something that it should be okay for Israel to do, it's something they must do. If they want to protect their people, they must do it. If they want to have a nation, they must do it. They must go in and take out Hamas. And honestly, there's been all sorts of internal turmoil when it comes to this stuff as well. I think there's a really good chance they're going to wind up bailing on this job before it's done. And then that just means we have another October 7th in the future at some point. It will happen again, as it's happened so many times before. And then we say we're not going to forget it. And then 3 weeks later, we get kind of bored and we see an AOC tweet and we just decide to change our minds. But at the time, October 7th happening and today, I think the mission is still clear for Israel. They need to do this. They need to protect their people. They need to take out Hamas. And who cares what the criminal court says? They have no jurisdiction over Israel or us or anybody else. They're basically a giant made-up body. And you need to do what your country needs. For us, it might be America first. For them, it's Israel first. They shouldn't care what we say. They shouldn't care what Biden says. They shouldn't care what the International Criminal Court says. They just go in, protect their people, and do what's best for their country. Since 2007, a group called Folds of Honor has provided life-changing scholarships to the spouses and the children of America's fallen or disabled in combat. In 2023, this is extended to include the families of the fallen first responders that they've been dealing with lately. 51,000 scholarships and more than $200 million so far awarded. It's a great organization. You might not have known about them. And you might say, well, I mean, I'd love to give some money to Folds of Honor. I wish there was a fun way to do it. Flying Ace has you covered. They have aligned with Folds of Honor to ensure the children of our American heroes receive the education they deserve. As proud supporters of Folds of Honor, Flying Ace has had the privilege of providing hope for the families of those who protect our freedom. And to that end, Flying Ace is proudly sponsoring 4 scholarships awarded quarterly this year. If you can, donate to Folds of Honor. They're a great organization. But another way to do that is just go to flyingacespirits.com and scan the QR code on the screen. The link in the show notes has the info as well. When you get a bottle of Flying Ace, if you've never had that, you're going to enjoy it quite a bit. When you get a bottle of Flying Ace, you'll also be donating to Folds of Honor. And as you're sipping that delicious drink, you can think to yourself, I'm doing something good for America. Yes. Make sure you use the promo code America. You'll get free shipping on every order. FlyingAceSpirits.com. FlyingAceSpirits.com. The promo code is America. And I mean, you're doing good work while having a good drink. How do you do better than that? FlyingAceSpirits.com. Promo code America. A couple of big developments in the Trump trial today. Michael Cohen admitted on the stand that he stole money from Donald Trump and the Trump Organization, about $30,000, as he overcharged for some work they had done on an IT service meant to fix online polls for the 2016 election, which is not a good expenditure of your money, in case anyone was wondering. Regardless, Cohen stole money and admitted to stealing money. So the jury has now seen him lie to every group imaginable, including stealing, theft from Donald Trump, a thing that he never paid any price for, and seemingly kept the money. So that's an interesting part of this. Then prosecutors in Trump's hush money trial arrested their case after 20 witnesses, over 200 exhibits. The defense then called Costello, this lawyer we've talked about a couple of times. he had insight on Donald or on Michael Cohen, who basically said he had nothing on Donald Trump. Cohen claims he's lying about that. We will see how this plays out. There's a bunch of controversies. People were thrown out of the courtroom. It was a mess, as you'd expect anything involving Michael Cohen to be. So we will see how this proceeds. But, you know, this thing might be over here in the next week or two, probably even less than 2 weeks. Honestly, you know, it's possible the defense rests very, very soon. More with on that on tomorrow's show. With the best conservative merch at StuDoesMerch.com, including this elderly man with a poor memory, Joe Biden mugs and T-shirts. Lots of stuff from our other hosts as well here, Blaze TV, great Blaze TV lines. You're going to love all of it. StuDoesMerch.com. The code is Stu10. You'll save 10% when you go there. We will see you tomorrow.